Hey. This is where the party's at. Look at us, all the cool and the beautiful people in one spot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen, and joining me as always, she is editor-at-large at primetimer.com and the co-host of Extra Hot Great, Tara Ariano. Tara, how goes it today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Just got back from a vacation and eager to dive into the world of Succession with you as usual. You can find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. You can also email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Wanted to start off by reading an email this week. This one comes in from Valentina. Valentina writes in to successionpodcast@gmail.com. Hi, Tara and David. Really enjoying the podcast every week, as you tend to pick up on many things I don't even think about. But have I picked up on something now, or am I just stating the obvious? I recently watched a Norwegian show called Scam, where every season the lead protagonist switches among the same cast, and perhaps subconsciously I started looking at Succession this way as well. Is every season primarily focused on a different Roy Child, the one with the closest claim to the throne? As soon as season one ended, it seemed like Kendall was out of the running. I got this impression that we had moved on from the Kendall season to the Shiv season, and I think my hypothesis has been right so far. Therefore, I wonder if the show will start setting up the Roman-Jerry power couple as season three's frontrunners, while simultaneously shoving Shiv deeper into the grave. And how about season four? Will Connor be in the mix? And the most important question of all, how many seasons till Greg the Broken sits on the throne? Thanks, Valentino. That's a Game of Thrones reference there, but yeah.
Yes. So
interesting theory from Valentina that like every season might cover a different character and their attempt at ascending to the throne. How do you feel about this theory, Tara?
To me, I understand the thought. My first reaction is, I don't think that the show still has laid enough track for a mostly Roman or a mostly Connor season. But that said, I still feel like this is more Kendall than Shiv, our focus in every episode. I mean, she's had more to do with the company for sure, but I still think it's more Kendall's story than Shiv's overall. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right that like, it would certainly be interesting if that was the case. Like, it would be an interesting way of structuring the show. But I agree that I don't feel like the show has set that up enough. And also, you're going to run out of kids really soon, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to have to do a lot of work to make Connor into a plausible contender. I could see the Roman Jerry thing being the focus of season three. But I think, you know, I didn't even think about it until you said it just now that it does seem like the main arc of the show continues to be Kendall this season and dealing mm-hmm. with the aftermath of season one, right? That is even more compelling than the Shiv storyline this season. And so if for that reason alone, the premise of this email is flawed. And sorry, Valentina, we award you no points. No, I'm just joking. I'm a big fan of Valentina's. But I agree. It's an interesting theory. I don't think it's quite going to play out in the way that Valentina predicts. But who knows? We don't know what happens at the end of the season yet, nor what happens at the beginning of next. So we will just have to see. But thanks for writing into us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Tara, today we're going to be recapping Season 2, Episode 8 of the show, entitled Dundee. And before we dive into the recap itself, I thought we should just talk about overall thoughts on the episode. Were you a fan of the episode? Did you think it was a solid episode, a good entry into the show? What do you think?
I thought it was pretty good. First of all, I like to say, I like how you pronounce it like the awards from The Office, the Dundies.
Yep. My pronunciations of things are notoriously bad. Yeah, Dundee. Yes.
Dundee.
Dundee.
When I was a very cool high school student in a marching band, our main rival were the Dundee Scots. So I have residual resentment for that name. I don't really. They weren't from Dundee, Scotland, although they were called the Dundee Scots. They were from somewhere in Illinois, I think. Anyway, I do like it when they travel. I think it's fun when the show gets to kind of splash out and show off their big budget. Like, I'm sure shooting at the V&A Museum was not cheap, and it looks incredible.
What was that location? The V&A Museum? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's for Victoria and Albert. It's like a craft museum in Dundee.
Mm.
So that's where the big event is at the end.
Nice.
Yeah. And it looks like it's right on the waterfront, and the building kind of looks like an arc, sort of. It's very beautiful. It's a beautiful obviously building. Recent architecture. there was a few things in this episode that were weird to me, and we'll get into it when we dive deeper on the episode. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. It was overall pretty good. Like there's been very few episodes this season where I felt like that's a weak episode, because even in the weakest episodes, there's always some crazy scene in the episode that happens that I can really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly the case of this episode. There's definitely some things that happen in this episode that are memorable. To me, it feels like, I agree that when they travel, it's very enjoyable, but I kind of liked the whole machinations and plotting of the first season. Like it felt very much like, hey, we have a pretty specific destination that we're driving to, and we're going to reach it with like great efficiency. Whereas I think the last three episodes have each been a travel episode, right? Like they've each been between Argestes, and then there's been Dundee, and then there was what was the other one?
Were in England.
They were in England.
Episode.
That's right. Yeah. And it's felt a little bit like they're treading water kind of, and like killing time until what I'm hoping will be a very eventful last episode or two for the season, where like everything finally comes to a head. I mean, it's not one of my favorites, but it is not what I would call a bad episode by any means.
No. And the other thing that's different about this one is because they're back in Logan and Ewan's hometown. There's sort of intimations about trauma that they went through as like, it sounds like quite young children.
Yeah.
But they don't really spell out exactly what happened. And I know that that's not what the point of this show is. Like, you know, you get one shot of Logan's scars on his back, and that was like how many episodes ago now? And they never really get into that either. And it would be weird if we suddenly had a Logan monologue, like explaining his, you know, inner pain. That's not what this character is or does.
Yeah, but at the same time, we actually got literally the opposite this episode. We got a non-monologue where, like, he's trying to convey things by not saying things when Connor asks him about it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but it's also unsatisfying for stuff to be, you know, picked up and dropped, I sort of feel like.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll get into this later on, but I think that is something that I'm really kind of concerned about this season is... again, season one, I felt like the storytelling was very much quote unquote in control. This is a term I use of like, is the storytelling becoming out of control? And I'm not ready to rule on whether or not it has gotten out of control, like away from the showrunners here. But it feels like very much in danger. Like there's so many subplots at this point. Very curious, like how, like the freaking biography with Michelle Pansel, like what, you know, is that going to be paid off in any interesting way? You know, so there's just like a lot of subplots at this point that I'm curious, like how they're going to be moved along in an interesting way or resolved in an interesting way by the end of the season. So,
in this episode, too, I mean, this is a huge cast. It's obviously difficult to service everyone's storyline, but usually the way that works is like you put them in pairs or trios, and here it's like everyone's sort of storyline almost feels siloed from one another. And you know, we get the one scene where all of the kids are like arguing about what they should do with regard to the Rhea question. And then the rest of the time it's like, it does feel like a busy episode.
Yeah. Well, those are our overall thoughts. Like, it wasn't a bad episode, but it wasn't, like, a great episode. But let's talk about what actually happened in the episode. Tara, take us through it, yeah?
All right. Well, as we said, everyone in the family plus the top team is heading to Logan's hometown of Dundee, Scotland, for a couple of ceremonies honoring Logan's latest big donations. Dundee University is naming its School of Journalism after him, and he's endowed a wing at a local museum, the V&A Dundee, in his mother Helen's name. Exception noted with regard to everyone in the family. Once again, Willa is staying home in New York, though she has an excellent excuse. Her play, Sands, is in previews at an actual Broadway theater. but it's in trouble. The performance all the Roys went to see still has placeholder dialogue because Willa got a virus. Connor ordered the wrong kind of sand, which may have been infested with sand mites that have colonized Greg. And though Connor may have thought he could just hit up the bank of D-A-D-D-Y, TM, bring it on, to cover all the expenses of this doomed enterprise, Logan doesn't seem eager to give Connor an advance on his allowance. So one thing that I didn't put in our notes, but I like how the showrunners just assume that the viewer assumes the reason for these donations all of a sudden is because Logan needs good PR for the proxy war and everything else is going on. Like, he needs a positive story. So that's the timing. But they don't sort of, you know, shine too much of a spotlight on that. But I would also say at least this means Connor doesn't have money to spend on his presidential campaign if he's wasted it all on Willa. So good job, Willa. Order more sand. Yes. Thank you.
Tara is on the Oppo research team for the Connor Roy presidential run. And I think this whole sequence was pretty hilarious, like the opening scene. I just, for some reason, derive a lot of pleasure from watching works of art that reference other works of art that we never see, you
know, yes.
Like you never see like what the sans play is. So you can only, you hear what people say about it. And then like you're forced to kind of reconstruct what you think it might be from what they say. Mm-hmm. And what we do know is that there is a lot of sand on the stage. I think that's,
yes.
And that it's not Shakespeare. Those are the only things that are really said about the play. And that's just like, I derive endless amusement from it because I like all the permutations are filling my head of like what this could be. So,
yeah, I didn't clip the exchange, but afterwards Kendall goes up to Willa and it's like the scene in Friends where everyone's just seen one of Joey's bad plays and they're trying to like divide up what things they can say to him that don't, you know, call out how bad it is.
Yes.
So, you know, the lighting was great or whatever, and you sure looked like you were having fun. And Kendall is like, you just, wow, you're a playwright.
You're a playwright now, you know? Yeah, like that's a, he's just like stating facts, basically. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, he also has a personal reason to not want to antagonize her. And it relatedly, Willa has personnel problems. Kendall develops a crush on Jennifer, one of Willa's actors, and flies her out to Dundee for all the festivities, for which Jennifer blows off two performances. This causes friction between Willa and Connor, and also between Jennifer and her castmates, but Kendall is so C-struck, to borrow a term from the last episode.
C-word struck.
Yeah. Yes, not S-E-A.
Yeah.
That he doesn't care about anything except having as much sex with Jennifer as he can. And if what we're hearing about the quality of Willa's play is accurate, then Jennifer probably is wise to invest her time in the media billionaire aggressively pursuing her rather than the play that might not last past opening night. However, after spending a considerable length of time with Kendall, Jennifer can't help pointing out to him how much he talks about his dad. She gets to stay for the museum ceremony, but after her introduction to Logan, Kendall can't help pointing out to her how often she used the word awesome. Since they're outside, he comments that she must be freezing in her gown, and instead of doing the classic guy move of giving her his suit jacket, he goes inside to get her coat, but actually to tell a functionary not only to get Jennifer on the next plane out, but also to tell her he got tied up so he doesn't have to talk to her again. So my question, why do we think Jennifer got iced out? Is it because she called out Kendall's fixation on Logan, or because her limited vocabulary embarrassed him in front of Logan?
I think my take is her making Kendall look bad in front of Logan. I mean, mm-hmm. he just had the most eager puppy dog look on his face. Like he just, you know, he just brought back, I don't know, a dead animal from outside as a prize to give to his owner. And she did not live up to that level of enthusiasm. And yeah. also, it's the thing that he mentions most proximately to sending her home. He says, like, wow, you sure said awesome a lot. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, she said it twice, you know?
Yeah.
I counted. But yeah, it was a lot. She had nothing to say. And I mean, that was extremely painful. That scene where he introduces her, because I don't know if this has happened to you, Tara, but like, have you ever introduced someone to someone else you cared about and like it didn't go well?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it just like that scene really tapped into that that idea in a very powerful mm-hmm. way. So
it did. But at the same time, like, obviously we know Kendall's motivation in almost every situation is to make Logan love him or at least not disapprove of him. But at the same time, I don't really get the feeling that Logan cares very much about any of his children's significant others. Like, I don't think he registered her at all either way.
Well, I mean, he did say to Shiv, like, she something like she has a head like a hot air balloon or something like that later. I agree, Tara. I actually agree with what you said, which is what makes it all the more tragic. You know,
it's true.
Which is that, yeah, he doesn't actually care. And, you know, that makes the idea of these kids kind of contorting their lives around his preferences to be really sad. So,
yeah, true. Also, putting her on the next flight means he's sending her back commercial after flying her out on a PJ. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he did say pointedly next flight. So that was a good observation. But yeah, my wife and I were watching this and, you know, he says to her earlier, like, hey, why don't you look up where Dundee is on the way to this private jet that I'm sending you tonight? And she says, finally, we start to see the benefits of what it's like to be with these people. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the episode, we also see the downsides.
Yeah.
Which are pretty substantial. So.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Although if she hung around long enough to like get married and divorced, you know, we don't see Rava, Kendall's ex-wife, very much, but she seems to be having a pretty nice life now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always sensed like Rava was like, here's the thing with this whole Kendall and Jennifer storyline is like, I had thought that the Naomi storyline was going to be like a major part of the rest of the season.
Yeah, I did too.
And then it's just completely dropped.
Yeah.
And is it going to come back? Who knows? But it's just like, it felt a little weird to me that, I mean, I guess what they're trying to say is that Kendall is spiraling so badly that he's like sleeping with all these random women and like doesn't give a shit about anything. And maybe that works, but then like, what? I don't know. It just, but then like, why? I don't know. It felt weird to me. What do you think about the Naomi thing? Like, did you miss Naomi? Like, did you feel like the Naomi thing was handled well? How about that?
No, I think it's weird that they just dropped it and without any reference. But I also think, even when they show Kendall having like sexual urges, I don't believe that he's horny for anything except drugs, truly, which is like the reason that the Naomi thing worked for me at all as a storyline is that they have that in common. But I don't feel like he like has any desires or drives other than like impressing Logan.
Do you think Naomi is going to come back in the next couple episodes by any chance?
It wouldn't surprise me either way. It wouldn't surprise me if she's a major part of the last two episodes of the season or if we literally never see her again.
Yeah, I saw somebody online coin the phrase Chekhov's dick pic, which I thought was interesting. Like, it's possible the dick pic is going to come back to haunt us in some way.
Right.
I think that's very possible, but
It would be very funny and very of this show if the thing that brought Kendall down was his dick pic rather than him killing someone.
Indeed.
Right?
Indeed. Agreed. Like, agreed 100%. That would be perfect. So we will see how that plays out. So a bunch of other stuff happens in Dundee, right?
Yeah, there's another mini storyline. Also attending the events in Dundee on Jerry's invitation is Edward, the shady financier that we met in our Justies, who wants Waystar to create a propaganda arm that will pump out positive stories about his native Azerbaijan. Jerry tasks Roman to stay on him and try to get him to invest some money in the company before the shareholder meeting. Roman's on it, but he also has a question for Jerry in this clip.
Oh, and one more thing real quick. Should we get married?
What?
You know, not that. Like an equivalent thing. Like I abduct you and force you to live with me.
That's not equivalent.
Well, then you kill me. You chop my dick off. You know, something. I'm kidding. But you know what I'm saying. You eat me. I eat you. Like they do in Germany. Anyway, a lot to think about. I get it. So let it. Bye.
I kind of think that if Jerry said she wanted to marry Roman, he would be all about it.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think he's being insincere at all in this scene, right? Like, he's this is his way of actually proposing.
Yes, he's being fake insincere.
Yeah, he's being fake insincere, and I think he actually would accept, which would be kind of sweet, you know? That's like one of the only pairings on the show that I would actually root for.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's going to come to pass, but...
Oh, no. I don't think it will.
Do you think it'd be really scandalous? Like, if...
Yes. I think in these circles, that age difference is too much. It's already strange that Logan has an age-appropriate wife. Like, for Roman to marry someone that much older, I think would be very strange.
Mm.
So earlier, the Roy children were discussing how Jerry was once the new thing, like Rhea, who had Logan's attention, and were speculating about whether Jerry and Logan had ever slept together. Since Roman is just as eager to earn his father's love as Kendall is, though not as sweaty about it, could this be a whole new element of Jerry's appeal for him?
I don't think so, Tara. I mean, his reaction was pretty negative when it was implied that Jerry might have slept with Logan.
Yeah.
It's just this, like, brief react. Like, for like a second, we saw like he was very disgusted by the idea. It reminds me of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, actually, which is the only other instance I can remember in popular culture of like a guy sleeping with the same woman that his father has slept with. There's just something really, I don't know. Is it like judgmental to say that that's like kind of gross? I don't know. Like, you tell me. Is that like non-sex positive or whatever?
I mean, I guess technically, but you know, it's pretty transgressive and edible to be sleeping with the same woman that your mother did. So, I mean, your father rather.
Yeah,
I mean, your mother is even more transgressive.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but I didn't know if that reaction was real from Roman or if it was for his siblings' benefit in case he thinks like they might be sussing out something between him and Jerry that he thought he better overact.
No, I think it was alarm that like he might, like Logan might have slept with her, and that would be very upsetting for Roman. But
perhaps. Yeah. So Roman doesn't get Edward's money. At this point, instead, Edward convinces Roman to go in with him on buying the Hearts, the Scottish football team Logan follows, according to Roman. Roman is thrilled to bring Edward over at the museum party to tell Logan the great news about the gift they got him, but Logan's team isn't the Hearts, it's Hibernian FC, the Hibs for short. Whoops. And the way Edward pats Roman on the arm while he sidles off in the middle of Logan's rant about Roman's fuck up suggests that some experiences are universal among all sons of angry billionaire fathers, I thought.
Indeed.
But these are just sideshows. Our main story is, as ever, the still open question of who's going to be the next CEO. And the negative campaigning by Stewie and Sandy is getting serious enough for Logan himself to get a robocall about his own dubious leadership. Rhea is not only still around to offer Logan her counsel on his pool of potential CEOs, she's also throwing a big surprise party with the museum dedication as a cover to celebrate Royko's 50th anniversary and solicited loving tributes all the kids have grudgingly supplied. Now, the fact that Rhea is the one planning the party struck me as very strange. She does not have any official status at Waystar. She's not a member of the family. All the dozens or hundreds of people who showed up for this thing wouldn't be taken aback by the breach in protocol of an outsider making a gesture this personal.
I 100% agree. It is absolutely bizarre. And the only thing I can think of that led to this situation is... Right, that I think what the people making this show want to convey is this idea of this kind of cat and mouse game between Shiv and Rhea, right? Like, you want these two people going up against each other. And so as a result, like, Shiv has just been dealt a devastating blow in, was it last episode, right? When she's like, hey, like, I think...
When Rhea set her up.
Yeah, Rhea set me up. Like, Rhea fucked me over. I think I just got fucked. Like, and... so that what you as the audience, or we as the audience, want to see Shiv get back at her for that, right? And in order for that to happen, the show then needs to contrive a situation so that Rhea can be put in kind of a position of weakness. And so, like, her being in this whole mix did feel super contrived to me, and served only to, like, basically have the Roys kind of alternately humiliate Rhea, but also, like, kind of have Rhea win them over and then be against Shiv. Like, that was the primary narrative function of Rhea being there.
Right.
And I think, like, I like the arc. You know, I like the overall idea. I don't know if I like the execution in this case.
Right? No, yes, I agree. Contrived is the perfect word for it. And the fact that it's not more called out it makes it even more strange.
Yeah, I mean, like, Logan does say, like, you know, oh, Rhea knows what's good. Like, Rhea, this is a good idea that Rhea came up with, like, make this big event. And it's like, is it? That doesn't really seem like it makes any sense. Anyway, but... they did pay it some lip service, but it is at very least strange. So agreed there. Yeah.
I mentioned the testimonials. I regret that we don't really have space to play all of them because they are hilarious. And apparently the lesson Connor took away from the eulogy that Willa wrote for him for Mo's funeral was that he should write like everyone in his audience is a first grader.
Yeah, this was a weird thing because we see the testimonials being recorded in an audio booth earlier in the episode, but then later they're played in the form of video. And I think that one of two things happened. Either, like, the plan for what the testimonials were changed halfway through making the episode, or we are supposed to understand that what was being recorded earlier is the film stuff, even though that makes no sense, and that they're just hoping no one asks any questions about it. Because obviously they're in the recording booth, they have microphones in front of them, it wouldn't look like what it looks like at the end of the episode. But I do think it's worth noting we don't see any of the recorded ones at the beginning played at the end. No. Maybe they just gave him audio and video testimonials, who knows? But it was a little weird that they're shown recording testimonials in an audio booth, and then later you see them doing video things.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
So casting a pall over all the good PR Logan will reap from this trip is another eruption from Cruises. Someone named Weisel, who worked in accounting and therefore knows all about payoffs, is scared of getting embroiled in a lawsuit. It sounds like he's ready to talk. Jerry is authorized to make him an 8-figure cash offer to keep his mouth shut. Logan also doesn't want Rhea to hear about this. So Shiv is, of course, campaigning the hardest against Rhea, starting on the plane by trying to make Marcia jealous of Rhea and Logan's apparent affair, though Marcia serenely tells her she's not a child. Evidently, Shiv has forgotten that Marcia is French. However, Marcia doesn't entirely ignore Shiv, pulling Rhea aside before a cocktail reception and sweetly asking whether Rhea is regularly tested for STDs. Marcia and Logan still sleep together, Marcia tells Rhea, so it behooves her to know whether Rhea is clean. Undermining Rhea continues over drinks, where after a suggestion by Roman and a nudge from Shiv, Kendall encourages Rhea to make a toast, mentioning both Helen and Logan's late sister, Rose. This is obviously an emotional third rail for Logan, who puts down his glass without drinking. The story of what happened with Rose, I feel like we'll need to get paid off later, along with what happened to Connor's mother, who was institutionalized. If that was mentioned in season one, I don't remember it, but that came up in this episode too.
Yeah, it's easy for me to forget that Connor had a different mom than the others. It definitely is made very clear in this episode, and something did happen to her. I don't know, Tara, like, do you have any philosophy on, like, what is okay to remain a mystery and what is okay to, like, what must people explain? Because you're in the notes here, you're like, we need to get this paid off later. And I'm curious, like, is there a reason you feel strongly that the Rose storyline needs to get paid off?
Because whatever it is such a big deal that it ruined this party. I don't know. It just feels like a big thing to bring up and never to come up again. But you're right. It's possible that we will never know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I felt the same way you did when I first watched the episode, which is, like, I felt like a little bit cheated out of the backstory, right? Like, I felt like, oh, this thing is what's going to be, like, a crucial... Like, this entire scene hinges on the knowledge of this Rose thing. I really would like you to explain what was going on. Like, I thought they were going to explain what was this episode. And they don't do that. And it's like, oh, now I'm forced to accept it as kind of this, like, background information that we just we don't understand. I think it's definitely walking that line in this episode. Because later on, also, Ewan, right? The Logan's brother, you know, says, like, Rose wasn't your fault. Like, there's this whole thing about Rose. And it's like, okay, like, you're coming up to the edge of what I'm okay with without you actually explaining what this is, you know? Especially for this show. This is not, like, a mystery box show. Like, this is...
No, it's not.
Yeah, so...
Do you have a guess about what the story is?
No, like, it could be anything. It could be, like, you know, Logan and rose were swimming in, she drowned or something. You know, like it, we have no, I have no idea what it is. So,
oh, yeah. Can I share mine?
Please.
This is constructed out of nothing. All we, one of the facts that we learned from this episode is that Ewan and Logan left Dundee when they were like really young and they never saw their mother. It sounds like after that, or possibly like maybe she died and that was why they moved to Canada. Not clear, but I wonder if like their mother had a mental illness or something and she killed Rose somehow. And so that was why the boys were sent to live with other family.
Yeah, I mean, that seems very plausible. And it would also make sense that Ewan says later, you know, it wasn't your fault, because that might be someone, that might be something that someone would blame themselves for. So,
yeah. But it, but that plus the scars on Logan's back, like if something, if this was an abusive household,
yeah,
like if her mother went too far, if Rose was a baby and like she got shaken to death or something, like even if it was an, you know, semi an accident, like right. accident, but intentional because someone was drunk or, you know, not well in some other way. We may never know. That's my theory. That's my headcanon.
It's I mean, it's just, I think it's just interesting to reflect on like, what good does withholding the information serve the story, right? Like,
right.
is it just because if you actually did explain it, like it would take away its power, you know?
Right.
I like reflecting on like, oh, like, well, of course we don't know what the true story is, so we can't really do the A-B test, but...
Right.
But I don't know. I think it's, as I've said, I think the show is walking up against that line of like, okay, you've made reference to this thing multiple times now, and like, you're either going to need to tell me or like not talk about it anymore. Is how
yeah. And the, thing is, if the point of bringing this stuff up and not exploring it is to say, it doesn't matter what Logan's sad story is, like what is important is how he's acting now, which is horrible, like just a pure monster, then I get it. But then you like, I feel like you don't get to have it both ways.
Yeah,
like if you're going to bring up the stuff that's clearly like still weighing on him and have people continue to bring it up like Ewan does later, it's kind of a cheat, I feel like.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is just a side note, but I also feel like I could spend this entire podcast talking about Shiv's outfit for this cocktail out event, which is a sweater dress with a turtleneck that is also backless. Like when I saw it from the back and then from the front, I was like, this is insane.
I mean, do you think she pulls it off is my question, Tara? Oh, so you're not a fan of this look?
No, I hate it.
Oh, wow. Like,
A turtleneck dress with a back, sure. Backless dress with like a scoop neck in the front, great. But both, like, it feels crazy to
me. That's the real transgressive thing in this episode. Not father and son sleeping with a woman, but a backless turtleneck.
Yeah, but I guess this is her look, because later she's at the museum party. She's also in like a halter dress that's backless, but at least then it's like her sleeves are also bare. Like this turtleneck thing is just like, it just looks like a full turtleneck from the front. And then it's like, surprise, there's her back for no reason. I don't know.
Yeah. She's done a lot of backless stuff this season, I think, but,
she's got a nice back. I mean, yeah. Go for it.
Yeah.
She did wear a weird outfit to the Emmys though, but we don't have to talk about that. Although so did Kendall, but we will talk about that later. not Kendall, Jeremy Strong, but also Kendall. Moving on, it's clear in general that Logan doesn't have many happy memories of his time in Dundee, or possibly that he doesn't have any. The kids have heard how his upbringing was so modest that the family didn't even have indoor plumbing, or as they put it, he shit in a bucket. Though when they go to Logan and Ewan's childhood home for a photo op, they can tell that, since it's a post-war house, it surely did have a toilet. However, when Logan pulls up with Marcia, he has no interest in a tour and drives on, leaving everyone standing in confusion on the sidewalk, including the protester holding up a sign that says Cunt Roy. Very good. Then it's on to the journalism school, where Kendall and Rhea joke ruefully about the school training journalists to be underpaid at content farms, or possibly not paid at all. Rhea then calls Kendall on his gamesmanship, but also makes an assessment.
Why are you trying to fuck me?
Trying to fuck you? What do you mean?
Rose? We both know what that was.
If anything, I'm just mildly offended on behalf of my sister and Frank, Jerry. And I wonder about the optics, but hey, my dad knows, so... Yeah?
Even so, I don't know how you've done it, frankly. What with everything you've been through?
Uh-huh.
You're good, though.
Right. Thank you.
No. You're good. But you're still in the rock tumbler right now. You're not ready.
I'm good. I mean, I'm over my shit. And I've met someone new. I mean, she is fantastic. And so, yeah, I'm not in the place you think I'm in.
No, it's okay. But when we're out on the other side of this hole, it's you. I'm telling you now. It's always been you.
So I was waiting throughout this exchange for her to let Kendall know that Logan has told her about the cater waiter. Do we think that he has, though?
I don't think so. I think that Rhea is just being strategic here and shoring up her allies as much as she can. That's my take on
this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with what knowing what anyone knows about Kendall is like when you're anyone refers to like a hard time he went through, they could just be talking about his drug problem.
Yeah.
But Kendall, the face that Jeremy Strong makes when Kendall dares to hope that she's right and that he is going to be the successor is, as always, a heartbreaker. Oof.
Agreed. Not the only time Jeremy Strong would break our hearts this episode, though.
No kidding. Also present at the school dedication is Ewan, not that he goes in. He and Logan snipe at each other a bit, but when Logan has moved off and Greg optimistically tries to frame the exchange as fraternal banter, Ewan clarifies the situation.
Yeah, he's a tough old bird, but he's...
He's morally bankrupt. He's a nothing man who may well be more personally responsible for the death of this planet than any other single human being.
He also makes the Callispatron franchise, which is, solid, mediocre entertainment.
In terms of the lives that will be lost by his whoring for the climate change deniers, there's a very persuasive argument to be made that he's worse than Hitler.
Right, well...
And I'd appreciate it if you'd stop working for him.
Okay, well... So, I have moved up significantly, and this might sound dumb, but maybe I can kind of work it from the inside, and that way...
If you refuse, I think it's well within my rights to remove your name from amongst the beneficiaries of my last will and testament.
Okay. Because that's quite a pretty penny.
Around 250 mil. And I'm sure Greenpeace would be very much obliged.
This was such a bummer for me. I spent virtually this entire trip or the speech being relieved that at least one person in the Roy clan has actual principles before I remembered not only that controlling Greg with his money is exactly the same shit Logan does with his children, but also that whatever Ewan has to leave Greg or anyone else is just the spoils from his brother's immoral businesses. If Ewan really wanted to make a statement, he should have told Greg to quit Waystar without making any threat about his inheritance and then surprised him at the will reading by leaving it all to Greenpeace anyway.
Well, that would be pretty brutal. But, I mean, James Cromwell is amazing. I love him. But the Ewan character is kind of becoming a bit one note to me. I'm just curious, like, are they going to do anything with that character other than he shows up every now and then to insult Logan, right? Which is basically what this character is. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. in this episode, he's like, hey, by the way, I had set aside $250 million for you and your family, Greg, which, by the way, I guess that's pretty major news. Like, that's like earth-shaking news, I would think. I kind of wish that they would have something more to do with that character other than he delivers these extremely biting remarks against Logan every now and then. So,
yeah, but the problem is that I agree. He is one note, although he's only in a few episodes every season. This is the first chance we've gotten to talk about him in season two at all. He hasn't been in it before this. But he like. I sort of feel like they bring him in to correct audiences who are like, I don't want to say watching wrong, but watching wrong and think that Greg is like the moral center of the show to remind us like,
right.
No, Greg is compromised. Like Greg is making choices that are not morally correct. And Greg knows it on some level. But at the same time, like Ewan can't be the norm of the satire either, because he also benefits from Logan's success. Like he's trying to have it both ways. He's trying to act morally superior, when at the same time, like the reason he's comfortable in his own life and has any money to give Greg at all is because of Logan.
Yeah. And whenever Logan brings that up, Ewan never has a good retort for it, from my recollection. So,
right.
But yeah, the great, great point about Greg. I think you're right that like Greg is compromised, and the Ewan relationship really reveals that in a stark way. So,
mm-hmm. It's also like the show forgot that Greg has random papers about Cruise corruption. Like, not that it would make sense for Greg in this moment to tell you in that, but Nicholas Braun also doesn't play it like this is part of his consideration of what he should do.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we'll see, you know, later on we're going to discuss this, but like there is somebody backing, presumably there's someone backing the Weasel guy, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
And Ewan might be the guy, right? And so like, yeah. if that's the case, that would serve this purpose that you just mentioned, right?
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see if that happens.
Right.
Also, only other thing I wanted to point out, we like to point out like the parallels that the show has to reality. And mm-hmm. It did feel to me when Ewan says something like, you know, it could plausibly be argued that Logan Roy is responsible for more deaths than Hitler.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of like what people said about one of the Koch brothers when they passed away recently.
Uh-huh.
That just like one of the Koch brothers passed away, and like basically everyone was assessing their legacy and how like they've done a lot to bolster climate deniers or go against climate change activists, and how like that will have far-reaching consequences. So I thought that was like the way I detected that echo of real life in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Was about like this climate change and like what is the legacy that these people will actually leave behind. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before the party, Shiv tries to get all her brothers on board with her mission to get rid of Rhea. The problem is that Rhea has successfully flattered both Kendall and Roman into siding with her, and that Connor is going to need to beg Logan for money in the immediate future and figures his best chance is to kiss up to Logan's new mistress. Even Tom tells Shiv he thinks it may be better for his career in the long run if Rhea becomes CEO. So Tom, I went back and watched this again just to make sure that I didn't miss something, but Tom does not say why he would prefer Rhea to Shiv as CEO, but then he doesn't really have to because increasingly he doesn't trust Shiv. And as we know, he shouldn't trust Shiv.
Yeah. But Tom does make the good point that Logan isn't just going to like give it back to her if Rhea doesn't work out.
Right.
Which if that's true, then it would make sense for Tom to back someone that's not Shiv. Right.
Right. But he doesn't say Logan won't give it back to her if Rhea doesn't work out. He's at this point, he's just talking about Shiv, like scaring her away.
Fair enough.
I mean, we'll get to what Shiv does that may be like the right play at this moment, but
yeah.
We're not there yet.
Yeah.
So then it's the party at the museum. Logan, who had told Marcia on their way in that he didn't intend to stay long, is so surprised by the big surprise that he immediately walks out all a fluster, which I thought was kind of cute. It was like, he only seems a little bit mad to me. He just really seemed so flummoxed and shocked that he was like, it was a rare vulnerable moment for him, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's an old man.
And like everyone kind of like just understands when he returns, you know, like no one's going to like embarrass him or anything. So they just kind of he's back, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah. So Shiv finds Logan alone in a quiet moment, and he's actually kind of candid and vulnerable there as well, as he shares his doubts about Rhea. That she's liberal and not the way Shiv is. You fucking get it, he tells her. He's also hung up on the fact that Rhea told him she drank, but that actually she doesn't. And I can't tell if it's a Scottish thing that this worries him. Scottish people, you know, by the stereotypically enjoy a tipple. Or if he just feels like lying about something so inconsequential is proof that Rhea isn't trustworthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like he doesn't feel like he got a sense of who she is. Like he thought he had a sense of who she is. and then he doesn't really, right?
Mm.
And I think that can be very disorienting for people. But I think one of the most significant aspects about the scene is Logan not recognizing houses that his own family owns.
Mm-hmm.
His mental health has been declining for a while now, and I think it's supposed to be one of the arcs of the season. So it'll be interesting to see if it's one of the plot lines that the show decides to pay off in the next couple episodes.
That's funny because I didn't read it as his mental health. I just thought these are houses he goes to so seldom that he didn't recognize them because he's never there. Like, she's like, no, that's the Malibu house. Like, we've never seen him in California, you know?
Yeah, this is fascinating because, like, when he, you know, he says, oh, well, this is excellent work, you know? And she's kind of, like, disbelieving, like, he doesn't remember. And it's kind of like, is this the show communicating to us, like, how a family member would actually react to knowledge of their own parents, like oncoming dementia, you know what I mean? Like, like, you wouldn't, Shiv is not like, oh, I'm very concerned. She's just like, oh, well, there's probably nothing wrong here. You know, it's probably just like a glitch or something,
right?
You know, like, but yeah, well, I guess we're going to find out in the next couple episodes. So,
yeah, I just wonder if in the context of this kind of extreme wealth, it's similar to like looking in your closet and being like, oh, I haven't seen that shirt in a while. Except
it's either making a trenchant point about Logan's wealth or a trenchant point about his mental state. We'll have to wait to see which one it is.
Indeed. So Greg, having figured out that Ewan is serious in his threat, finds Logan in the men's room and tells him why it's time for him to negotiate his Gregxit, which is cute.
Gregxit made the entire episode worth it, in my opinion. That's just amazing.
It is cute. Logan confidently says that Ewan is too much of a coward to disinherit Greg, regardless of any threats he's made. But Logan also doesn't promise to put Greg in his will. Not that anyone should or would believe it if he had made such a promise. So Jerry pulls Shiv aside to tell her and the rest of the non-Roy top team that she has not been able to come to terms with the Weasel. He's turned down $5 million, $10 million, and $20 million. When she asked what his number is, he said there isn't one. They think someone with a grudge against Waystar is backing him financially and that whatever is coming is going to be so hideous it's going to rip the next CEO's face off. Should they tell Logan? Shiv confidently tells Jerry they should not ruin Logan's night.
So I think the parallel here, right, is for those who don't know, Peter Thiel, bankrolled an effort to sue Gawker out of existence, basically, right? That if I recall correctly, the Gawker network of blogs was targeted by Peter Thiel because he didn't appreciate their coverage of a wide variety of topics, including Peter's own personal life. And so he basically was able to find people to with like legitimate grievances and back them financially so that they could sue him, sue the Gawker network, I should say, until essentially like Gawker had to sell to another organization. And that's what this plotline reminded me of, right? Is that like, oh, there's somebody out there with like significant resources who is gunning for Waystar Royco. And it is kind of a sad commentary on the American media, the American press, that the legal system could be used as a cudgel to silence them. Should be troubling for anyone, even if the organization being silenced is a reprehensible one, as it is in this case, it seems.
It is similar, except with the hero and the villain in reversed from the Peter Thiel Gawker story. And they're not trying to sue them into silence. They're trying to expose like legitimate shady dealings. Like,
yeah, so
I don't think that
maybe the parallel wasn't that good, Tara.
Yeah, I mean, it is similar in that like it was someone with deep pockets that was going after this, but in this case, like it's hard to argue, even if you do the victim math, to quote Kendall from the Argestes episode, that it would be wrong to try to give justice to the people who have been victimized on Waystar Cruises.
All right. Well, I retract my analogy. But
see, I'm trying to silence you.
Yeah,
now of this podcast.
Now we see the violence inherent in the system. Anyway, go ahead, Tara.
Okay, so then Kendall takes the stage and celebrates Logan with a performance.
So when Rhea was planning this, she asked me to help out with a little tribute of a certain flavor. And after a lot of convincing, well, Here we are.
Is he about to strip?
Just remember, I think he's going to masturbate on stage to a photo of Dad.
My boy Squiggle cooked up this beat for me. Check it. Born on the North Bank, king of the East Side, 50 years strong, now he's rolling in a sick rod, handmade suits, raking in loot, five-star general, y'all best salute. Yo, bitches be catty, but the king
is Jesus, no. No. NWA.
I read it, it is burning my eyes, but I cannot look away. Time.
L to the OG, dude be the OG, and he playing like a pro, see? L to the OG, dude be the OG, and he playing like a pro, make some noise.
The first time this season that Succession made me scream no at my TV was when Shiv announced at Turnhaven that she was the next CEO. The second time was when Kendall started rapping, and as good as Jeremy Strong was in Return, I almost think he should get an Emmy for how much Kendall commits to this horrifying display. Like, Jeremy Strong does not sell out this performance at all. Like, Kendall thinks he's amazing. Like, he is feeling himself so much doing this awful, awful rap, totally oblivious to how much everyone is laughing at him. Like, it's really hard to watch.
Yeah, no, my wife was screaming the entire time, and she was screaming to block it out, because she didn't want to have any sonic memory of this event.
Oof. Yeah. Also, given that spelling Logan's whole name also lets Kendall end on the letter N, I also worried that an N word without the hard R at the end would come out of Kendall, because he strikes me like the kind of white hip-hop fan who thinks he can get away with calling people my N word.
Well, I'm really glad that didn't happen.
Me too.
But perhaps the most notable part of this Kendall performance is that he did viral marketing for it. Jeremy Strong did viral marketing for this episode at the Emmys last week.
He did!
Because he wore not the exact same outfit, but most of the same outfit that he wears in this episode.
Yeah. So, he's in a brown tuxedo. I've never seen such a thing. It's bizarre. And I think the one that he wears, that Jeremy Strong wore to the Emmys, was like more gray, and it had more going on the lapels. But both of them, it's like, what was that decision making for him to wear that?
Yeah, there's a reason why people don't usually wear brown tuxedos, right? It's because in general they don't look good.
Yeah.
But I think people who saw the brown tuxedo at the Emmys on Sunday night and then see this episode will realize it all makes sense. It all adds up.
So while the kids' tributes are projected on a four-story wall, Shiv goes to Logan's side and tells him he has to listen to his gut, but also says of Rhea, for now, she's the one. He can't give the job to Shiv or anyone else out of sentiment, she says. So Logan passes Rhea on his way to the stage. To her false apology about the scale of the party, he grumbles that he's not crazy about surprises. But then, with very little fanfare, announces that he has chosen his next CEO and that it will be Rhea. And up until he said Rhea's name, I thought he was going to show how much trust he has in Shiv by choosing her instead, and that Shiv would have outmaneuvered herself again. But the fact that this worked seems to suggest that Shiv really could be Logan's rightful successor, after all, that she calculated right.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point.
And it's also interesting that for her tribute, Shiv went with kind of a Cordelia from King Lear take, which is, quote, look, I know you hate all this bullshit, so I'll just say, fuck you, Dad, and wish we were having a wine instead of being here with all these people who are scared of you. Just interesting what it tells us about their relationship.
Yeah. So here's my kind of issue with this episode is that out of the many that we've identified, is that I think, like, season one made Logan Roy's inner thought process basically unknowable to us, right? That we, and even through a significant part of this season, we didn't know it. And as a result, I think it was, like, very formidable, right? It was very, like, hey, this guy's operating on levels you don't understand, because you literally don't understand what he's thinking. And season two has shown us much more of his thought process, and I've been kind of disappointed at the results. He comes off a bit Trump-esque, and what I mean by that is it's often said of Trump that he focuses most on what the person who spoke to him last said. And maybe that's what the show's intention is, but if so, it saddens me that this once formidable force has been lowered to this. Like, there's this moment he has with Shiv, like, what should I do, Shiv? You know, I'm not sure what to do. And Shiv's like, no, you got to do it this way. And the reason the show did it that way, right, is that it wants to show that Shiv is like a master maneuverer, manipulator, yeah. Right? That she also can strike back at, like, it's like Shiv strikes back. That's this episode, right?
Yeah.
And I get that. But then as a result, they're making Logan seem like, oh, like, I'm going to just do whatever, you know, the person who I last spoke with said. Do whatever they said last. And that's a little disappointing to me.
I guess, yeah. But I also feel like part of the point of the show is that he's coming to the end of his career one way or another. And so, you know, in season one, we definitely saw him making weird strategic choices, like his fixation on, like, I want to buy a bunch of local news channels. And people were like, what? Like, that's an old man. That's an old man fixation. He's not thinking ahead. He doesn't see the value of, like, Valter, for example. He's stuck in 80s mindset. And so it seems consistent with his character that he would just, once Shiv gave him, not that he needs permission, but when she was, like, not arguing for herself, it made it easier for him to go with the decision that it seems like he was always leaning towards once Rhea came in the picture anyway, you know?
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. So you have not been disappointed with Logan Roy's machinations then?
No, I don't think the point of the show is that Logan has machinations at all, really.
Mm.
Like, all right. To me, the point of his character is that he brings, also like Trump, though, is that he comes up with some crazy cockamamie idea and everyone around him has to, like, adjust reality and make that the right choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
But I did think the Shiv part worked, you know? The idea that she's, like, leading Rhea to the slaughter, like, that was pretty satisfying. And
because you don't really register until the episode is almost over. They're like, oh, yeah, Rhea doesn't know about Weasel. She has no idea.
Yep.
She thinks she's won. Anyway. The night's not over. There's still a 50th anniversary plaque to unveil. Marsha's not going to stay for that, though. She didn't appreciate Logan's surprising her with regard to Rhea, along with everyone else. Logan counters that he hasn't forgotten her telling him to sell his company, which she did in the premiere. She sincerely tells him both that he broke something tonight and also that he's boring her. Maybe the most devastating insult a French person can dish out. When she dismisses the plaque as his shiny little gravestone, he's stung. He has one more hurdle to clear after that as Ewan waylays him on the lip of the stage.
Mother would have hated all this. And that trash you call news.
No, we last saw when you were 5 and I was 4. But you know what kind of journalism she would approve of?
I know she never would have approved of what you've become.
What? Your meal ticket?
I'm just surprised you're still standing. Any other man would have died from the shame.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to know which is more toxic, your news outlets or your cruise division. All those years blaming yourself for Rose?
I'm not interested.
That really wasn't your fault. This, though, this is your fault. This empire of shit. Time to pay up.
One thing we haven't talked that much about is Marsha. This is actually a big Marsha episode. She gets a few big moments to shine, I think.
Yep.
Telling Shiv that she's an adult. Like, she starts off by saying, like, hey, like, I don't, like, you know, piss on the floor whenever it thunders too loud.
Yeah.
And then is able to show strength with Rhea by, like, intimating that she understands the dynamics of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But even she has her limits, right? Which is, if you're going to hand over control of the company to someone, you should probably tell me first. And Logan's kind of holding a grudge against her from this thing that she said in season 2, episode 1. So I am a big fan of whenever the show focuses more on Marsha. And I thought that her arc played out pretty strongly this episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And if they're trying to set the groundwork for her, like, deciding it's no longer worth it to be in this marriage. Like, you know, when I'm with someone, I'm with them. And when I'm not, I'm not. It was the unsaid part of it I said at the time.
Yep.
Back in our Jesties, that this could be, you know, a bad PR thing that he would have no recourse from that would make him look bad. And that, you know, from what we've seen about Marsha in this episode and in general, she probably doesn't really give a fuck about him keeping up appearances. Like, she wouldn't stay for that reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Ewan's speech to Logan right before he gets on stage is supposed to let all of us know the person that's backing Weisel is Ewan.
Yeah, that's your theory for who it is.
Yeah.
I think that's very plausible. Not somebody that came to mind, just because it felt like, you know, backing the Weasel would be like three-dimensional chess or whatever, you know, or 4D chess or whatever, and that just didn't feel like Ewan's style, but I think it's very plausible. So,
well, if he has a grudge against Logan, which we know he does, and if he feels like he's compromised by having taken this money in the first place and wants to do something with it that will be of like net benefit to the world, this would be a way to do that.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of the recap of the episode. But every week, we identify winners and losers of the episode. We each pick a winning Roy and a winning non-Roy, as well as a losing Roy and a losing non-Roy. Winning Roy. Who's your winning Roy of the week, Tara?
Well, despite a pointed hello from the actor she slept with so that Tom figures out who he is, gonna be Shiv.
For what reason?
Because Shiv got Rhea exactly where she wanted her. Rhea's going to have to be in the crossfire when whatever happens with the Weisel's lawsuit happens. She got to make Logan think that she was loyal enough to put the company before her own personal interests by telling him to pick Rhea over her. She made all the right moves in this episode.
I think you're...
Other than that dress.
Was it even a dress or is it just the turtleneck?
I think it was a dress. I think it was a long dress.
Completely agreed. She made all the right moves. She played it correctly. We'll see how that works out for her next episode. Losing Roy of the episode.
Logan, and he doesn't know it yet. He only knows a little bit of how he's lost.
Yeah, I'll be curious, like, when the Weisel thing plays out, like, what Logan's reaction is. Like, there's this moment when Jerry says to Shiv, like, hey, if I told your dad, like, this was your decision, would it still be the right decision? And she's like, it's the right decision, you know?
Yep.
I'm curious, like, if that moment is going to come up again, right? If that's going to be made clear to Logan that that's what Shiv did. So we'll see. But I agree. Logan is losing Roy of the episode. Okay. Winning non-Roy of the episode.
I'm going to say Rhea. As far as she knows right now, we know she's not a winner, but for today, she's gotten what she wanted. An honorable mention to the Democratic Socialists of America, who get a shout out when the kids are needling Rhea at the cocktail party about her liberal or leftist affiliations when they say that her mother volunteers for the organization. Good job to the DSAs for getting this product placement.
I think you're taking, you know, we pick winners and losers of the episode. And Tara, you're taking of the episode really literally in this case, meaning that as of the end of this episode, Rhea is still a winner, right?
Yes. She will get to have one nice night. And
Winning non-Roy this week, I'm going to choose Edward, who was able to get co-financing to purchase a football club for seemingly nothing in return. Just like Roman's wanting to buy his way into his good graces and in the hope of more capital later. So Edward is my winning non-Roy of the episode. How about losing non-Roy? Tara, who's your losing non-Roy of the episode?
Oh, poor Jennifer. Kendall's cast-off actor friend sent back on probably in a coach seat on American Airlines.
Wow. Sad picture you paint there. But
the indignity.
I agree. This episode shows how, quote-unquote, normal people are very often billionaire playthings and... they suffer for it because, like, Jennifer's going to experience some real social consequences as a result of this trip that we will probably never hear about. She is also my losing non-Roy of the week. That's Jennifer. At the end of every episode, we also like to pick a quote of the week. Tara, what's your quote of the week?
Normally I go with a Roman line, but this week I did not. Ewan razzes Logan at the dedication by saying, quote, the Logan Roy School of Journalism. What's next? The Jack the Ripper Women's Health Clinic?
That is a good one, yeah.
Yeah, he had a lot of time to think of it, so it's like has less impact in the scene, but it's still a good line.
He was waiting the entire trip over to just unleash that line. But yeah.
Exactly. But there's also a very funny exchange later when Ewan is quoting Tacitus with regard to, Logan's ill-gotten gains. Greg says, Tacitus, classic Tacitus, and also later says, all killer, no filler with that guy.
I think Greg pretending to know things he doesn't is one of my favorite genres of line in the show.
Yep.
I think there was a line earlier this season when, like, Connor was making reference to something that happened in World War One, and Greg was like, oh, yeah, that, you know, that thing. And it's just like, it's so funny to hear him try to do that stuff. My quote of the week is an exchange between Edward and Roman. Edward says, you know, buy this football club with me 50-50. And Roman says, quote, buy them? Yeah, let me have a think. I mean, I don't really see a downside other than zero knowledge or interest in Scottish football. But yeah, let me have a think, which I thought was pretty hilarious. And also kind of illustrates that, hey, doesn't even matter to this guy that Roman knows shit about any of this. He just wants the money.
Yep.
Because money wins, Tara. Money wins.
Mm.
So I think that's going to take us to the end of this episode of The Sweet Smell of Succession. Any other thoughts on the episode? Anything else you want to bring up? I think we've done a good job of illustrating some of the concerns we have with the show. But I think that, like, Kendall doing the rap, Shiv stabbing Rhea in the back, like, those are still some great moments that are the best of what the show can do. So
yeah, I agree. Yeah. I'm just curious to see in the last episodes of the season which things are going to come back up again and inform the way the story ends until season three.
Same as well. All right, Tara, until next week, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can listen to me every Monday on the Again With This podcast about Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place. You can hear me every Wednesday on the Extra Hot Great podcast. And you can see me on Twitter at TaraArianO, flogging my various ventures.
All right. Find me on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. And also, I host a show called Culturally Relevant. You can find that on Apple Podcasts. I interview people every week, and I'm really enjoying doing that show. Hope you have a chance to check it out. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.